And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, how are you feeling on this spring training season?
There seems to be some kind of warmth to the breeze at the moment. There seems to be the familiar sound of leather popping, bats cracking, all of those good sounds, because pitchers and catchers are finally back. The Rays are warming themselves up for some spring training baseball, and I'm just in a good mood about it. We're seeing people in the clubhouse, we're seeing Fan Fest happening. It's all going down, and that just means that opening day, just a few short weeks away, baby.
Isn't it great when you get a notification or you see on Twitter a Tampa Bay Times post? You now don't have to wonder what fresh nonsense has occurred in the stadium saga, and instead can click on the link and watch, or there's a video embedded in the tweet, and watch Rays pitchers throwing, Rays batters warming up. It's a beautiful time of year. It truly, truly is.
Yeah, it's what we've all been waiting for. It means that the warm weather's right around the corner. It means that we can just settle down on a Sunday afternoon and just sit and watch a day game. It's bliss. It's bliss. And I've missed it.
It is. It is. And we're really glad that you've decided to spend some of that blissful time with us here today talking about Rays baseball. If this is your first time watching us, thank you guys for joining us. We're going to have a great show for you today, jam-packed with infield previews, all the names that you expect to hear, some of the ones maybe you don't. We're going to break it all down for you. If you are coming back again, we thank you for returning. If you would do us a huge favor and drop a like or a subscribe, lets us know you support the show, helps us, it's free to you guys. And if you subscribe and follow us on the socials, you will know when we go live, as we will be doing all season long. And very, very soon, we'll be talking about games being played and not just previews. So you're going to want to be around for all of that. We're going to get right into it for now, though. And we're going to start the infield preview, something I've been looking forward to all offseason. When you look at kind of the positional breakdowns of this team, all of them have exciting things to talk about. The infield, there's just fun players at almost every position in the infield. And we're going to get it started with first base. Pat, who would you say are the primary options for the Rays at first base going into 2025?
Yeah, I think the Rays infield, particularly up the middle, which we'll get to in a bit, can be a bit of a puzzle that we're going to need to solve. But I think pretty safely we can chalk Yandy Diaz in as our primary guy at first base. There were questions about whether he'd be on the team this year, but he is, and therefore we can chalk him down to be the first baseman. I think Jonathan Aranda is going to get some looks in every now and again. And potentially, you could maybe, if you want to stretch it, push a catcher like Danny Jansen, Ben Rotvet over to first base. But I think the two main suspects that you're going to want to look at are Yandy Diaz and Jonathan Aranda.
Yeah, and I think this has been something that we've kind of known all offseason, that these are the two guys that are going to get this spot. Like you kind of mentioned, the middle of the infield has, you know, there's some element of competition going on for those spots, especially with the potential injuries of the guy who might be starting at second base. The corners are kind of locked in. And the thing that kind of makes it interesting is while at third base, we'll get to that in a minute, there's not really much of a contender to like take starting spots away. There's nobody that's performing at the level of the guy who's starting. You could still say the same thing for first base, but there is somebody who's kind of nipping at the heels and is providing a lot of value on his own, right? And that's Jonathan Aranda. He is a guy that we've watched for years tear it up in AAA, put up crazy numbers, and we always say, well, when's he going to do it at the major league level? He's done everything he can do at AAA. It's time to see it at the majors. And as we kind of discussed during the offseason, we saw a little bit of what he could be when he came up and had a really, really successful 24 campaign. Because despite the fact that he had an injury to kind of start the season when it looked like he might have been getting onto the roster to begin the season, he came on and played 44 games for the Rays, 6 home runs, 14 RBIs, slash 234, 308, 430. That 430 slug is really nice for a guy just coming up from the minors. 113 WRC plus, 0.4 F4 in only 44 games. Significant.
Yeah, particularly when you count the fact that he's not earning any WAR from his fielding contributions. He's a guy that is not going to be able to field any position particularly well, but you can kind of hide him at first base. I think what's exciting is when he, like you said, when he first came up, he felt like he was just like hitting the ball really hard right at guys and getting a lot of bad batted ball luck. But then in September, that started to turn around and he really started to show the promise that we all hoped from him coming into the campaign. And I think he's also a candidate to really benefit with the move to Steinbrenner Field in 2025. I think short porch in right field, lefty hitter. He's a guy that's kind of like a line drive hitter as well. He hits a lot of like smoke line drives, but they'll turn into home runs with that short porch. So I think there's no way that you can keep this guy out of the lineup for any kind of particular length of time. The amount of reps he gets at first base, I think, really depends on how healthy Yandy Diaz is and how many times they want to give him a DH day off his feet.
Yeah, and I think when you look, you make a really good point of it. It's just hard to keep a guy like him out of the lineup. A 113 WRC plus and a slightly longer cup of coffee is not a bat you can keep out of a lineup like the Rays, where you just do not have a wealth of guys hitting at that level. You got a couple guys that are producing there, but you just don't have enough guys to keep him out of the lineup. And he performs fine at first base. It's not amazing. The issues with him defensively have been talked about ad nauseum. If he could play a competent second base, I think there's a really good chance that Brandon Lau could have gotten moved this offseason. It's almost like an almost too easy of a switch in to swap Jonathan Aranda for Brandon Lau, because they profile not quite the same, because I don't think Aranda has quite the power that Brandon Lau does. But they profile very similarly. But because Aranda really just can't play second base at a level that you're comfortable with for an extended period of time, he's played himself out of that potential. So the Rays are left with this difficulty of how to get him into the lineup because the bat is real. So I think you're 100% right. We're going to see him a lot at DH. We're going to see him a lot when Yandy needs a day off. And kind of leading into that, we want to kind of talk a little bit about what our expectations are for these players. We expect these two to be the top guys getting innings, getting plate appearances at first base. And as we're kind of setting expectations for these players, one of the things that I wanted to talk about real quick before we do that is something that, you know, as sports media, which I'm gonna be generous and call us sports media, there's a lot of discussion around how we talk about players and how we criticize players. And one of the things that I've always said when I talk about criticizing players, I have championship expectations for this team pretty much every year because it's what we've seen from them. There hasn't been a significant shift in the talent roster of this team to make me change my mind there. So when I talk about these players, when I talk about expectations, and when I talk about good or bad, it is always in the framework of a team competing for a championship at the major league level. That's a very high standard. So when we talk about guys meeting or not meeting expectations, at least for me, I'm talking about it from within that framework. So I don't generally say guys are bad, but if I'm saying somebody's bad, it's within the framework of they're not playing well enough to contribute to a team that is going to play for the World Series. And that's kind of my framework around setting expectations for all these players.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's very fair. I think going, let's talk about Yandy first of all. I guess the expectations for Yandy is he is going to be batting leadoff most days, assuming health. And I think the Rays have been quite good at managing Yandy these past couple of years and his health. He's not exactly the most mobile guy, so he will need days off his feet every now and then. But assuming no freak accidents, you'd want him leading off. And really, I think if he's hitting under at 130 WRC plus, you'll be a little disappointed in what he can do. He's something that was a bit concerning early in the season when it comes to Yandy Diaz is that he wasn't taking his walks very much. He needs to make sure that he's not pressing. The reason he's a good leadoff guy is because he's an on-base guy first and foremost. So they need to make sure that, well, Yandy needs to make sure that he's being selective, making sure that he's doing what he's always done, really, and command the strike zone and only swing at the pitches he wants to swing at and generate that hard contact that way instead of chasing and pressing. I think he needs to be that tone setter in the lineup. And we learned last year that when he's not clicking, it makes it way tougher for the rest of the Rays lineup too.
Yeah, and when I look, if I'm just kind of perusing his stats at any point in the season, the numbers that I want to see are an above 400 on base percentage, and like you said, a WRC plus in the 130 to 140 range. That's the expectations for him. If he's doing anything less than that, something is either probably wrong, either from a injury perspective or from maybe an injury perspective of other players, not him, that results in him pushing and pressing a little bit and not performing the way that we expect him to. And when we talk about these expectations for Yandy especially, we speak from evidence of the consistent stat profile that we've seen him put out there almost every single year. When I talk about a 400 on base percentage, that seems like kind of a, you know, a kind of a big ask, but that's what the expectations have been for him, because that's what he's done. So when he's playing at the level that he should be playing at and what I think he would expect himself to play at, that's what I want to see from him. I expect him to play right around 140 games. He's been right around that 140-ish games played for the last several years now for the Rays, has been the leadoff guy. When he's not in the lineup, I expect a guy like Richie Palacios to get some starts at leadoff. There's always the Brandon Lau leadoff option as well if Yandy's not there. That immediately puts guys on the back foot. But generally speaking, Yandy is your leadoff guy. There's not any reason to change that. 140 games, that's kind of what I expect for him. Unless there's a serious injury, I expect him to be – and, you know, if we're talking about how many of those is he playing at first, 100, 110. Like, he's going to be playing a lot of games at first base. He's going to be starting a lot.
Yeah, got him at around 100, 110 at first base, I think.
Yeah. So that leaves Aranda with maybe those other 50 to 60 games, and you maybe throw in a Brandon Lau day here and there. Danny Jansen here and there. I don't know that there's anybody else. Maybe Morel. Morel's never played first base. I did some kind of looking on him because I thought about him as maybe a guy they might try to get in there because they want to get his bat in the lineup. But he's never played first. He probably could figure it out. But it's going to be the majority of those. The rest of those games are going to be, at the feet of Jonathan Aranda, and it's going to be his games to lose, I think. The thing with Aranda that I think it starts to get tricky is I actually expect him to play somewhere in the range of 90 to 100 games next year. So if you think about, 50 of those games being at first, maybe, then you got 50 more games, at least for me, to what I'm expecting him to do. Because I think because I expect him to hit to somewhere between a 110 and a 130 WRC plus. I know it's a wide range, but like that's what I'm expecting, a really above average bat from him.
Yeah.
And you need a bat like that in your lineup. So then the question becomes, is he just taking all those at DH? And the kind of the other side question is, does Yandy Diaz play all 140 games for the Rays this season?
I think with that question, I think it totally depends on how well the Rays are in terms of standings, wins, losses. If they're not in the playoff hunt, I could see a move, but I think if they are, there'd be no reason to move on from him unless Aranda's going on an absolute heater. But even then, I don't know why you'd subtract from a team if you're doing well. It just seems weird. Do you think there's any like weird rogue people in the minor leagues that you think could get a look at first base? Let's say, for example, Yandy Diaz gets significantly hurt. Jonathan Aranda takes the bulk at first base, but you need like a guy there to get Aranda off his feet every now and then. Is there any kind of rogue prospects on your radar sitting in the high minors?
The only guys that I think, really, there's only one guy that I think could, if we get to June and you just need somebody and you're in the midst of a playoff hunt and you really need to keep pace and you need somebody to come up and try to approximate major league average performance, the only option for me is Trey Morton. I don't think Xavier Isaac, as he's currently constituted, because those are the two big first base prospects that the Rays have right now. Trey Morgan, Xavier Isaac. Of those two, I don't think Xavier Isaac, if you brought him up to the major leagues right now, I don't know that his swing would play well enough. I think he'd probably run into a couple balls and they would go way farther than they have any right to go. But I don't know that he could come to the majors right now and provide value. I do think Trey Morgan could come up, and it would be a little bit less fireworky. Like there would be a lot less, you know, hit or miss to him. But I think he would come up and do a presentable job and an acceptable job for a short period of time. But, you know, I think the Rays have really, you know, banked on having Yandy and Arana being their first base. And, I mean, the truth is, even if those guys go down, I don't even know that the prospects would be the first place they would go. I think the more likely scenario is they would bring Brandon Lau over from second base and let him play first. Mm-hmm. And then put somebody else at second, because you got a lot of guys that can play second. You can put Palacios at second. We're going to talk about it here in just a second. There's a lot of guys you can put there. So I think they probably – it takes a lot for them to go to the minors, and I think that's kind of by design, because yeah. The guys that you have at the minors are going to be really good, but you'd really like them to keep cooking down at the minors before you have to bring up to the major league level.
Bob Seymour, yes or no?
For a week, sure.
Okay.
But if it's going to be longer than that, I don't know that that's what I want to see. I mean, if we need like 10 days, fine. He would probably be fine for 10 days. Like, I'm okay with that. If we have no other options, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to like lose my mind if I see some injuries to Yandy and some injuries to Aranda, and we bring Bob Seymour up for 10 days to get those guys back on their feet. Okay. I'm not panicking them in that situation.
Okay, and last question on first base, I suppose, is, I guess, how confident are you in our first base position, options, and productivity going into 2025 on a scale of like 1 to 10?
It's a 10. And if I was going to rank like how confident I am in like each position on the, like, it would just rank them, like, first base is probably like 1 or 2. It's very, very right. High. I just have a – because your number one option is maybe the best player on the team, probably tied with Brandon
Lau. Best pure hitter, for sure.
Best pure hitter. And then your second option is also really good. And there's no position, I don't think, where you have clearly both. You would be totally fine if either one of those guys started an extended period of time. I would be comfortable if we traded Yandy starting Jonathan Aranda this almost the whole season. I would be fine with that. The defense might suffer a little bit, but I would be totally fine starting him basically the entire season.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of confidence. I think that's probably the position that is least likely to become like a big problem for us.
Yeah.
And we kind of mentally geared ourselves up for Yandy to be gone. So the fact that we have him feels like an acquisition almost. Yeah,
it feels
okay.
Like a bonus. Yeah.
Yeah, so first base, 2 thumbs up. And probably quite easy to solve.
Indeed.
Second base. Now, with second base, I think we all immediately go, it's Brandon Lau. Brandon Lau is our second baseman. Yes, so true. But also, Brandon Lau will definitely not be playing all 162 games. It's who he is as a person. Let's say, best case scenario, he plays like 100, 110 games as second base. That's probably the best case scenario. We've still got 50 games to cover there. At least, but realistically, we could have anywhere up to half the season to cover at second base. Who are the other players for you that could play there?
And I think when you look at the options I'm about to list out, you can tell that the Rays know that, because there's quite a few that can play there. You can play Richie Palacios there. You can play Jose Caballero there. You can play Curtis Meade there. You could moonlight Christopher Morel a little bit there if you needed to. Ha-Seong Kim can play there. Taylor Walls could play there. You could go like – you could genuinely go maybe 7 or 8 deep on guys that could play second base and be competent for either – some of them for an extended period probably, like Palacios, I think could probably play there for a good bit, and I would be pretty fine with that. Meade probably the same way. Caballero is – he is what he is. He provides value on the base paths. So there's a lot of guys that could play there. And I think that's by design, because they know the guy that they want to be starting is at best, like you said, playing 105 to 110 games. Like, that's just kind of what he's been. And he's, I think, you know, we talked about this ad nauseum, but the frustration with Brandon Lau is we all saw the 2021 season, and we are all desperately praying for just one more season like that. Because we know if we could just get him for one more season, fully healthy like that, what he could do. And it's just as much fun as he is to watch, there's that little nagging frustration in the back of your mind, because you just know there's more there that we're not getting.
Yeah. I think in a fully healthy season, Brandon Lau enters the conversation of best second baseman in baseball.
1,000,000%.
Like, is he definitely? Maybe, maybe not. But, like, he's in that conversation with your Ketel Martes and big name second baseman like that. It's just, yeah, like you said, the health of hope throws it back. I mean, do you think he has another at least 35 home runs in him?
Oh, 100%. And that's the thing. He's got – the home runs are in the bat. It's just a question of whether the bat will be in his hands in the batter's box with enough opportunities to hit those home runs.
Sure.
That's kind of where I'm at with him. You know, like right now, like if I was going to give my expectations for Brandon Lau for 2025, if he does what we expect and plays about 100 games, he's still going to hit 22 home runs. He's still going to slug 460, 470, hit to a, you know, 125, 130 WRC plus, put up somewhere around 2F4, even if he's not healthy and he's playing like 110 games. The thing that's frustrating about him is if he's healthy, I genuinely see no reason why he wouldn't hit 35, 40 home runs, 140 to 145 WRC plus, knocking on the door of 4F4 and down ballot MVP votes.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, you know, like the bad version of him is still a really good guy and still a top 5, 6, 7 second baseman in baseball. But the healthy version of Brandon Lau is the second best second baseman in baseball and is getting down ballot MVP votes.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So let's say Brandon Lau is either hurt or needs a day off his feet. Who is your number two at number two?
See, this one's tough for me because, like, if you just take the roster construction piece out of it, if Brandon Lau is not playing for a day, the person I'd most like to see there is Curtis Meade, because I think he does have stuff and I want to see it. The problem is, as I go through constructing this roster and putting together the guys I want, it becomes difficult for me. He's my last guy on the roster, last guy on or off. And he's competing with the likes of Eloy Jimenez, maybe Chandler Simpson, and others, which we'll get into as we discuss more and more this roster, the way the roster shakes out. He's going to have a hard time getting on the roster, I think. And it's unfortunate because he draws a really unfortunate comparison with Jonathan Aranda. Aranda played 44 games last year. Meade played 38. Meade did not get the consistent run that Aranda got. He was a little more spotty in there. But Meade hit to a 67 WRC plus to Aranda's 113. And Meade is not a defensive wizard. He's fine. He's got a nice glove, and the arm is always makes you kind of like, you know, white knuckle a little bit when it leaves his hand, because you're just hoping the ball's going to get there in time. But it generally gets there just in time and on target. So that's okay. I'm going to have a hard time getting him on the roster. And that's why I end up kind of saying, from a realistic perspective, I end up saying Richie Palacios, because I just want to – he's another guy where I just want his skill set in the lineup, because he gets on base and he provides value on the base paths. I want him in the lineup as much as I can get him in the lineup personally. So if it's not Brandon Lau, for me, the guy I'm putting in is Richie Palacios. Now, if for some reason you feel the need to start Taylor Walls at shortstop and Ha-Seong Kim is healthy, then Ha-Seong Kim is I would probably start him over Palacios, because Palacios could probably get a start in the outfield. But right now, if Brandon Lau is not ready to go on opening day, I want Palacios in there at second.
Yeah, I was worried when you said Curtis Meade, because I think Palacios does pretty much anything Curtis Meade does better than Curtis Meade. I think he bats lefty, so he has the – yeah, but the thing is, Palacios is going to bat lefty, so he has the long platoon, and he's got a short porch this year. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if Palacios can eclipse, you know, if Palacios gets enough playing time, I think he could get 15 home runs this year.
Really? Just because of the short porch?
Just because of the short porch. Yeah, I think it plays to his strengths massively. Okay. Palacios, again, super tough guy to face if you're a pitcher, because he grinds out those at bats, has good on base ability, makes great swing decisions. It's true that he doesn't have the kind of raw power, but he's just crafty in the box. And like you said, he has that base running potential. And I think he's at least on par with Meade defensively. So I would really struggle, unless you were facing a lefty pitcher, why you'd play Meade over Palacios on a given day at second.
And you know, it's funny that you said that, because I just kind of looked up his numbers for Palacios for the last like 160 games, and he's hit 11 home runs. So like, mm-hmm. I think I sold him short a little bit there. I think you're right. I think he could put up 15 to maybe 20 home runs with a short porch. I think it's possible. He does have a little bit there. He probably even underperformed a little bit with the slug metric last season. He slugged 318, but the last season in St. Louis, he slugged 516, which was a smaller sample size to be sure. But I wonder if maybe he doesn't even out somewhere closer to 400 slugging, which would definitely, I think, would still probably put him under Meade. But like you said, having him be that long platoon guy, it's just really hard. Meade is the guy that I just feel like I just don't know how we're going to get him on the roster, because I think he's a guy that could start for a lot of teams, but I don't know where he fits on the roster.
I'm 100% with you. I don't have Meade on my opening day roster, assuming health. And I don't hate the guy. I just don't know what he does that other people could do better. Like, he's not as good a fielder as Caballero or Walls. He can't hit as well as Aranda. I guess he could, if Eloy really struggles in spring, he could maybe get a spot. And Chandler Simpson really struggles in spring, he could get that spot. But I think it would be more of a case of the other guys not seizing the opportunity. I think it's more likely that happens than him taking the opportunity, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I don't know what went wrong with him, because he was a prospect with quite a bit of hype around him.
Yeah.
You're still on the bus. I've got off the bus on Curtis Meade.
I've got one foot on and one foot off. I'll put it that way. Here's the thing with him. I think that if he got an extended run at the major league level, he would put up 115, maybe 120 WRC plus. He would play league average or slightly below defense, and he would be a solid contributor to a major league team. But yeah. I just don't know if his profile, like, I just don't know where he's going to get the at bats from. And that's what's so tough, is because I agree with you. I can't give him at bats over Palacios. I definitely can't give him at bats over Brandon Lau. I can't give him at bats over Ha-Seong Kim when he's healthy. I could maybe give him at bats over Caballero. Mm-hmm. But I can't give him bats over Caminero.
No, and like, if Caballero's in, it's not because you need hitting right now. It's because you need to, like, field. Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, it's tough. I feel bad for Curtis Meade. I see a scenario, like, we're talking about expectations. You know, I've got Brandon Lau about 105, 110 games. I've got Palacios taking the majority of the rest, maybe like 40 games there, and then a sprinkling of Curtis Meade, a sprinkling of Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah. I think you're right. Caballero might get a game or two there as well. I think that's it. And I guess, like you said, Chandler Simpson is a prospect to watch who can play second base. I think he'll mostly get his reps in the outfield.
Yeah.
But he could serve a spell at second base in a pinch. Morrell played a few games at second base. There could be a world where he get. Yeah. That's the most we can say about it.
The other guys
stood where the second baseman stood. Whether he played second base, I don't really know.
The other guys to watch from the minor league perspective are Cooper Kinney and Emilian Petre, which I probably just butchered his name. I'm sorry. Emilian Petre, I probably just butchered his name again.
Right.
Sorry, man. But those are the guys to watch in the minors. And, second base is going to – it's a long line to get to second base right now. But those are – if you want to look for some guys of the future, those are the guys to look and watch a little bit if you want to.
Yeah. Did Braden Taylor ever play any second base coming up?
He's a utility swingman guy. He could play there. He could honestly – now you mentioned that, I kind of am like mentally slotting Braden Taylor as a third baseman, but he probably has an easier path to MLB playing time at second base, even over those other guys I just mentioned, because he's farther along in his development than the other guys I just mentioned. So he's another guy that, I mean, he could absolutely affect the major league roster for a game or two. I'd be willing to give him 3 or 4 games if we're just like, we're just passing games out here. I'd give him 3 or 4 games maybe at the MLB level this season.
Yeah. I am like 7.5 out of 10 confident in second base. I think we the thing we have at second base is depth. We got so much depth. And there's nobody that's like, oh no, we have to play this person at second base today.
Right.
We got none of that. But whether it's a position of strength or a position of really depends on how much time Brandon Lau plays. Right.
Yeah. And I think even if Palacios is healthy, I'm still at like a 7.
Yeah.
Like I think I'm at an 8 because I'm assuming Brandon Lau is going to play most of those games. But even if it was just Palacios, I'd probably be at like a 6.5 to a 7. I'd be like, okay, I'd be okay with that. Let's see what the kid has. Let's go. It's only if you were telling me we're starting Caballero like every day, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's not awesome. I sure hope he gets on base so we can steal and it doesn't get thrown out, because otherwise I don't know what value we're going to get out of there. I think the 7.5 to 8 is a good, that's a good, I mean it, but again, if Brandon Lau's healthy, it's like an 11. So
yeah, right. Which I know a lot of Rays fans in and out on Brandon Lau, but unfortunately if you're a Brandon Lau hater, you've come to the wrong podcast, because
you have,
we are Brandon Lau enjoyers. Just admit that, like, striking out is fine if you hit 40 bombs. Like, you all loved Carlos Peña.
You did.
And he's the same kind of profile of hitter. So, yeah. Like, you can't like Carlos Peña and not like Brandon Lau.
You can't. And you can't like fashion and not like shop.rblrsports.com. Because when you go to shop.rblrsports.com, you get access to the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams, the Rays, the Bucks, the Lightning, the Rowdies, the Sun. It's all there at shop.rblrsports.com. And what you also have to love about that is you can get 10% off your entire order there using promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, 10% off your entire order at shop.rblrsports.com.
Yeah, we've got the confidence levels absolutely locked down at 10 for the clothes you can get at shop.rblrsports.com. Barely even a discussion.
A position that has had a lot of discussion, and a position where I would love to hear our audience that's watching, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this position, because it's one that we've talked about ad nauseum since number 5 elected to no longer be on this baseball team, is shortstop. It's a position that we were kind of just gritting our teeth on and saying, to the walls. Better he sure hope he continues to play really good defense, and maybe Caballero will steal some bases when we put him in there. Great. When is Carson Williams ready? That was our thought process. Kind of changed because of a guy named Ha-Seon Kim, who, while injured until mid-May to early June, totally changes the shortstop room for the Rays.
Yeah. Ha-Seon Kim will be the primary shortstop for the Rays when he returns, whenever that is. He seems more optimistic than what the Tampa Bay Times are reporting, where they're saying, like you said, mid to late May, maybe early June. He's saying he feels like he's ahead of schedule and might be able to turn up near the start of May. But we'll see. And the Rays like to exercise caution with these kind of things. So we'll see. And also, because it's a shoulder thing, a position that involves throwing a baseball quite hard, quite a lot, Kim may get a few reps at second base as well, just so he doesn't have to throw quite as much. But yes, Kim is the primary shortstop once available. It all kind of just depends on when he's available. Until then, unfortunately, we are going to be on the Taylor Walls train again. And we've talked so much about Taylor Walls. I don't know how many times we have to say it, but he's not gonna hit particularly well. He can sometimes have a pesky at bat and draw a walk, but like that's about all he can do with the bat. I expect him to be better than he was last year, now that he's slightly further removed from a hip surgery. But If he gets anywhere close to 100 WRC plus, he's playing out of his mind.
Yes.
You kind of predict an 80 WRC plus from him, but you know the fielding will be exemplary. It will be top class. Yeah. But you also know Kim will provide top class fielding as well, but with an above average bat. So it's a dead zone hitting wise until Kim comes back, because Caballero is not particularly exciting as a hitter either. There's speed and there's defense at the position, but that's all there is until about a third of the way through the season. Again, depth is something we have at the position. Like we said, we got Kim, we got Walls, we got Caballero, and of course, Carson Williams waiting in the wings, who I think will see at least our major league game this year.
And I think that's kind of the sort of interesting thing about shortstop is there's a world where Ha-Seong Kim is the shortstop for the majority of the season, but he is not the starting shortstop to begin the season, and he's not the starting shortstop to end the season. Like, I think there's a real world where that's a possibility. Not a likely world, not a very probable world, but there is a world where that is a possibility. I am targeting third week of May. We have a home series that starts at the beginning of that week. That's my current target date to get him back, which would put us about 40, 45 games in. I'm giving Kim about 120 games after that that he'll be involved in. I would expect most of those to happen at shortstop. I think more closer to 115, actually, now that because if he's 45 games there,
then yeah, FanGraphs
110, 115.
FanGraphs projects him to play 100 games next year.
Yeah, but when he's playing, I expect him to hit around that 108, 109 WRC plus that he's shown in previous years, and he's probably going to put up two or 2.5 F WAR when he's on the field, which is awesome, and that is what, you know, changes the mindset around shortstop, because your other options are Jose Caballero, who had a nice, let's be fair. Jose Caballero in 2024, 140 games played, 9 home runs, 44 stolen bases, 83 WRC plus, 1.9 F. That's not terrible. 2 wins. Like, okay, that's fine. You're not like crazily excited about that, but it's like, okay, all right. That's not terrible. The thing is, he's not as good at defense as Taylor Walls is, which is why the expectation was that Walls was going to start at shortstop, because they'd rather have Walls' defense than Caballero's bat and feet. Walls is giving you, 80. He gave us last season, he was hurt a little bit, 84 games, a 60 WRC plus, 0.2 negative F WAR. The one stat that for me is the hardest to look at is his 248 slug. It's just hard. It's just tough to look at. 183 average. I don't expect him to be that bad this season. I expect him, the one thing that's good about him is he's, like you said, he does kind of get on base. But I only expect him to play maybe 60, 70 games, because I think we're going to see the majority of those games are short played by Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah. I'm fully with you. Let's throw some respect on Caballero as well, because he was the league leader in steals as well.
He was. Caballero is not a – he is a useful player, and he is a – I would say that there he would start for a lot of teams probably, or he would at least be the first man up off the bench. And, could maybe argue he is that for the Rays, but he definitely provides value. Can't say he doesn't provide value. He does.
Outs above average love him as well. He had 7 last year, which had him over 90th percentile. And I know we've talked about why Taylor Walls does not have that. And I would say we have got 3 plus defenders at the shortstop position, which is lovely to have.
Yes.
And again, we've got depth. It's just that 2 of those guys out of the top 3 cannot hit.
Yeah.
Carson Williams... I don't expect him to get the leash to be a starter this year. I expect him to come up for a cameo in September more than anything, unless he really pulls up trees. Because his hitter profile is kind of interesting. He's got power, but he does have strikeout in him. And that can be risky when you're first coming up. He does have some swing and miss in him.
Yeah.
And I don't want fans to get carried away with Carson Williams because he's not Wander Franco.
Right.
He's a better fielder than Wander Franco, but like he does not have the bat to ball ability that Franco does. He's probably got more power, but like, yeah, he will strike out more and he's not a 300 hitter. Like he's more of like a Brandon Lau type hitter. He's like if Brandon Lau was like a really great fielding shortstop.
I'm down with that. I'm okay with that.
Brandon Lau is a so-so defender at second base and can put up 3-4 WAR. So imagine like Brandon Lau playing Taylor Walls. Well, not quite Taylor Walls, but Ha-Seong Kim level defense.
Yeah. Like I think the thing that I think I do get what you're saying. I don't want like I'm not thinking of Carson Williams like Bobby Witt Jr., Gunnar Henderson. That is not the tier in which I am thinking of him. I am thinking of him in the Willy Adames type of range, but maybe a little better than Willy
Adames. I think Willy Adames is a really good comp for Carson Williams. Like he's got the power to hit 30 bombs, righty hitter, good fielder, great fielder, will strike out sometimes. Yeah. Imagine like Willy Adames, like good Willy Adames.
But he could hit in the trap, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yes. He might not have to, but that's
a story for another day. That's true. That's a story for another day. He will be really good. And I agree with you. I would like my ideal scenario is he gets this entire season basically to develop in the minors.
Yeah. So what's your confidence in the shortstop position?
So my confidence sits right around a 7. And that is only because I haven't seen Ha-Seong Kim come back from this injury yet. Yep. If he comes back and he's great, this goes up a lot. But I have to leave it there because if for some reason he's not what we expect him to be coming back from injury, or if it takes him longer, then it starts to get a little closer to a 6 maybe, or even below depending. But like right now I'm going to say a 7 because I do expect him to come back.
Yeah. What was your confidence before the Ha-Seong Kim signing?
Oh, probably like a 6, 5.5, 6. Like just, yeah, I was like, mine, it's whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like, for me, it was like a 5-4 just because like, I hate like dead zones in the lineup. I hate that like there's a spot in the lineup that every time it comes around, you could go, that's an out on the board. And we had like 3 of those last year. The fact that we were going to have to deal with that again had me really down, even if the fielding is good. But now I agree. I'm like a 7, and it has that asterisk because Ha-Seong Kim depends how many games he plays. If he plays like 100-plus games next year, then that goes to like an 8, I think. We'll talk about this at the end, but like I'm so jazzed about this infield. I'm really jazzed about it.
And I think the guy we're going to talk about next in the next position up for us to discuss has a good amount of influence in how jazzed we are about this infield. And that's because we're going to talk about third base, and we're going to talk about a guy named Junior Caminero, who is maybe the hottest young player right now in Major League Baseball. The guy, other than maybe Paul Skeens, that people are like have their focus on and have their eyes on after what he did at the Dominican League and what we know he can do from a power perspective, all eyes on Junior Caminero to start this season.
Yeah, it's so exciting. He's probably the biggest power prospect in baseball right now. In a limited sample size last year, he showed some good stuff. I thought he got better as he went along. He did hit the ball into the ground a little bit for me. He's got to be careful of hitting too many smoked ground balls because that can get dangerous. I love Caminero. He's so exciting. And I've said it a million times and I'll say it again. How he performs this year will track directly to how well the Rays perform as a whole team. I don't think there's a world where he struggles and the Rays make the playoffs.
This team will go. In years past, it was the team goes as Randy and Brandon Lau go. This year and probably going forward, it is this team goes as Junior Caminero goes. And you can maybe put Brandon Lau still in that category, but you are 1,000,000% right. Because when you look at a lineup, if you insert a Caminero playing at the level that we hope he can play, the way that affects everybody else in the lineup, especially if Brandon Lau is in that lineup as well, the way that affects the rest of the lineup, it makes it so difficult to pitch around. Because I think one of the big things about it is you could have Brandon Lau and Junior Caminero from opposite sides in the batter's box, maybe one after another, making it just so difficult for any pitcher. And late in the game, really difficult for a reliever because you can't just pick, you can't just stack it. You've got to have somebody who's roughly platoon neutral to get those two guys out if you're coming up against them. If there's a scenario, right, where you're coming up against the top of the Rays lineup and you're looking at Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, maybe Morel, maybe Aranda, and then Junior Caminero, you are in a situation where you have to have a platoon neutral guy, or you just gotta really hope that one of the guys on the other opposite side is not gonna get the job done, because it's just gonna be so difficult to navigate. And that's not even getting into the guys like Morel or Josh Lowe. That's something that we could talk about a little bit more as we get closer to the season. I think this is one of the more balanced lineups when we talk about righty lefty that the Rays have had from a production standpoint in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Good options on both sides. Weirdly, like, we've got no switch hitters in the lineup. Oh, I guess Walls.
Except for Walls.
Yeah. But, like, does it count if he's if he sucks from both sides? Caminero, it's a lot of – the one thing that scares me, it's a lot of pressure to put on a 21-year-old.
For sure.
That he's going to have to just run as the starting third baseman. I've got him down for 150 games, maybe 145 games at third base.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play almost every day, maybe get the odd DH day off his feet, assuming health. And he's not really showing any indication that he'll get injured often. So,
Knock on all the wood you can find as you hear that.
Yeah. assuming health, it's going to be great. What I do worry about a little bit is we've talked so much about the depth. Third baseman, it's Junior Caminero or bust, because otherwise we're going back to the well of guys we just talked about. If he goes down, we have to go to Caballero. We have to go to Walls. We might have to go to Kim. We might have to go to Meade. Like, none of those guys are particularly inspiring. And that's why I say Caminero is so crucial, because third base, there's not much behind him if things go wrong.
Here's the only other thing, and I don't know how able or willing Yandy still is to do this, but could Yandy play there for a little bit and you put Aranda at first?
There's a world, but I feel like Aranda even is not the man he was in 2021 in terms of his mobility.
I'm talking about Yandy, or talking,
yeah, Yandy. He's not the guy. He doesn't move around even as he did 3 years ago, right? Yeah. He wasn't the most mobile guy when we brought him in as a third baseman. So I would worry about putting 33-year-old Yandy Diaz at third base.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I have my number two guy behind Caminero is a guy that I don't even know is going to be on the roster, and it's Meade. That's the unfortunate thing. The good news, if you're looking at third base from a depth perspective, is you do have a bona fide guy in the minors that could be that backup in Braden Taylor, and he does have utility ability as well. So I do think in the future you're going to have a good second option behind Caminero to give him a day or two off his feet. And I do think Ha-Seong Kim is a good option as well. The problem is, if he's not playing third, somebody else has to play shortstop. But if Ha-Seong Kim is still with the Rays next year, then I think third base becomes a position of strength, because you could have Williams playing shortstop and Ha-Seong Kim playing third. So again, like, this year, I kind of agree with you. It is a bit of a position of weakness when it comes to depth. But I do think that is going to get sorted out even as soon as next year.
Yeah, I think we had a similar problem with Paredes. Like, there weren't really many other third base options there. It's just Paredes never gets injured, which is great. How do you feel about Caminero's defense?
It is good. He is not Manny Machado.
No.
Just accept that. But I think in the same way that Paredes was a little underrated defensively, I think it's I think he can play as good of defense as Paredes.
Right.
I think it's about the same. I think his arm is pretty good. His glove is pretty good. I don't think he's the most – he's not the most mobile guy out there. He's mobile enough to get the – I mean, he was originally a shortstop a couple of years ago. He was considered a shortstop. So – and he made the move to third base faster than some other guys. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Wander making the move to third, and he didn't end up doing that. But, you know, Cam Manero did make the move to third, probably because they were expecting to have them both in the same field. But I'm just going to let that go, so I don't have to think about it anymore because I don't want to think about that. It's going to make me upset. I think he'll be fine at third base. I'm not overly concerned about his defense.
Yeah, me neither. I think he'll be completely fine. And there's a couple of plays that he's made. He's quite good at coming in, I think. I think I've made a couple of seen him make a couple of plays where he's charging in, like on a bunt or a weak chopper. I think he's quite good at that. But I think he's pretty fine overall. And he's not going to steal many bases, I don't think. He's not the fastest guy out there. We just need him to stay healthy. That's the thing. We just need him to not get hurt and then watch the home runs pile up. I'm putting myself at a 7 out of 10 confidence just because I think he'll be great. Do I think he'll be great straight away? Not a sure thing. Do I think there might be an adjustment period because he's 21 years old? Quite possibly. And we need to temper our expectations. Young players, I've said it a million times, will go through the worst slump you've ever seen at some point. Caminero will probably do that at some point this season. But if he really clicks, then like there's no reason why this team can't be fighting for, you know, 95 wins. So it's just a lot is riding on him and there's no depth behind him. So I'm putting third base as like a 7 out of 10 confidence.
The rational part of my brain says a 7. This other part of my brain has a loop of Junior Caminero's home run over that giant wall in the Dominican series playing on repeat every about 30 seconds. So I'm going to put it at an 8 because I just can't pretend that part of my brain isn't there. I really do not have a lot of concern about him being good pretty soon out of the game. Maybe not right away. Maybe it'll take him like 20 games maybe to ramp up. But I think the fact that he was performing at the level that he performed in clutch moments against MLB-ish arms, MLB-ish competition. I don't know if it's MLB. There were some MLB players there, some of which maybe are, you know, some blast from the past names out there. But there were some MLB-ish competition there, and he was performing the way he performed. So, and I'm not saying he's going to perform that well at the majors, but I do think somewhere in the middle is a good starting point, and that's going to put me at about an 8 to start off with for third base.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Here's my bold prediction.
Okay.
Does anyone have the stat for the longest home run in Rays history?
Oh, let's see if I can find it real quick.
So in 2021, as of 2021, and I don't know if anyone's hit one further than this, as of 2021, Willy Adames hit one 462 feet. That's at the Trop. That's the longest in Trop history.
Yeah.
Okay. Does Junior Caminero hit a home run over 462 feet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. I'm finding as I'm looking it up, Avisail Garcia hit one 485.
Okay.
But that was at the Marlins Park. I don't know if it was longer than Adames's, but I thought Mike Zunino had a 470 home run at some point at the Trop. Maybe I'm misremembering that. But either way, I think Junior Caminero will in short order own the longest home run hit by a Rays player, period.
Right. Yeah. I think that's my bold pick is that he will hit the longest home run in Rays history this year. Do we go to Coors at all this year? I know we play them at home to open the season, the Rockies, but...
Oh, I don't know. It's a good question.
Because if we go to Coors, then all bets are off. We've got 500-foot home runs on the table with him. I mean, yeah. That home run that he hit in the Dominican League was probably close to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw it was like four, I think it was 470 something, but I'm not, don't quote me on that. I have to look back up again.
So to summarize, we on our best day, Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Ha-Sung Kim, Junior Caminero infield.
Yep.
How's that feel?
Really good. Feels really good.
Yeah. It feels great, doesn't it? On our worst day, realistically, we've got a Jonathan Aranda, Jose Caballero, Taylor Walls, and Curtis Meade infield. How's that feel?
Suboptimal. Not great. There's still some guys that can do some things in that lineup, but not great.
Yeah. There's a world where that infield could play a game, but yes. you're banking on the majority of games being option A. And that feels great. That feels like it stacks up with any infield in baseball. Is it the best? Is it better than the Dodgers with Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts? No. But, like, I'd put it, like, if we put it up against the division, I think it's right there.
I feel pretty good about that versus the division. I'd have to really look into it. The only team that probably would probably beat us is the Orioles.
Yeah.
But that's the only person that I'm – yeah, that's the only team that I'm thinking would be above the race.
Our lovely producer, Eureka, has just informed me that 478-foot home run is in 2001 by Vinny Castilla is the longest hit at the Tropicana Field.
470. I still agree that I think Junior Caminero is going to find a way to get to 480 or 490 or, you know. Because, I mean, like, I'm just imagining, like, somebody eventually is going to throw him a 100-mile-per-hour fastball that is poorly located that he will be sitting on and just annihilate. So that I think that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. Weirdly, when we talk about the whole team, as solid as this infield is, if we break it down into rotation, bullpen, infield, outfield, I think the infield's like third in my most confidence out of those things.
Yeah, because I mean, you'd probably put both pitching staffs above the infield. That's as good as the infield is. I'd probably put both pitching staffs above the infield.
Yeah, I still think this is a good infield. I think that's what we can safely say. Like there's times where we could have been like, if Taylor Walls and we didn't have Hassar Kim and it was Taylor Walls, we'd say this is a fine infield. I now would go to say this is a good infield.
I think it's a good infield with the potential to be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
If health is there and guys play the way they're supposed to, this is a good to great infield.
Yeah. It's just a shame we've been so hurt these past couple of years where we always have to be scared about health.
Yeah. But hopefully, maybe this will be the year that the Rays get some positive luck in that way. And we're going to find out very, very soon. Spring training starts for the Rays this Friday on the 21st. We get the first Rays spring training game. Exciting, exciting times. As we're kind of wrapping it up, do you expect any surprises for the Rays on opening day in the infield, or are you expecting Yandy, Bilal, Walls, Caminero?
Yeah, I don't expect this group to change now. I think the infield is set. I think maybe the infield is the most set of any of the four groups that we talked about.
Yeah, I would agree. Barring injury, I think that's going to be your opening day infield. You heard it here first, folks. That's your opening day infield for the Tampa Bay Rays. It's going to be really, really exciting to see how that takes shape. And will the infield for the playoffs be different? Will we see guys moved? Will we see guys coming up from the minors taking those spots? We see guys playing above what we expect and taking some spots from other guys. Who knows? But that's kind of the beauty of the season. And we hope that you're going to spend this entire season with us, watching all of that unfold, telling us what you think. We're just really, really excited to go through it all with you guys. If you've watched this entire episode with us, thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed. If you did, do us a huge favor and drop a subscribe and a like. Let us know you support us. It's free, helps us out so much. Baseball's going very, very soon, guys. But for now, raise up.
Spring training games will be played by the next time we talk. Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.